On Christmas Eve in the year 1021, 18 people gathered outside a church in the German town of Kolbicht and danced with wild abandon. The priest, unable to perform mass because of the irreverent din from outside, ordered them to stop. Ignoring him, they held hands and danced in a ring dance of sin, clapping, leaping, and chanting in unison. The enraged priest recorded a local chronicler, cursed them to dance for an entire year as punishment for their outrageous levity. It worked. Not until the following Christmas did the dancers regain control of their limbs. Exhausted and repentant, they fell into a deep sleep. Some of them never awoke.
As a result of the outbreak, your city or entire region may be endangered by a lethal agent. If conditions at your location make this a possibility, you need to consider staying in place until the threat has subsided or blown over.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Viral Load Podcast, the disease podcast for a diseased world. Mm-hmm. As always, I'm Eddie Pupa.
I'm Brett Bales.
And we are still chilling. We are alive and well. Things are getting back to normal. Not at all, but...
we're still in June.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We got a long way to go. But I will say right now we're kind of off our rocker here. I'm three LaCroix deep. Mm-hmm. I know Brett is also deep the nectar.
I'm on my last half of a LaCroix, so if this episode sucks, you can blame it on that.
Yeah,
I am dangerously low on my ambrosia.
Wait. What type of LaCroix are you sipping on?
Oh, mango, man.
Mango. I always go with I always do the cran raz. That's my jam. Yeah. I always go raz cran.
Call that a poor man's mango.
Listen, I will say I've been cheating on LaCroix lately. I got some bubblies. Not a bad substitute. Like as far as seltzer subs, it's pretty decent.
I mean, yeah, it's better than water.
It's funny because when I was younger, I used to give people so much shit for the fact that they drank flavored water, and I was like, keep your shit out of my water. Like, I just want regular water. Yeah. And now that I'm hooked on LaCroix, I'm screwed because I feel like I always have my thermos with me when I go out and about, and I'm pretty decent at drinking water, but when I'm at home, I forget regular water exists. So if we're out of LaCroix, I'm just like, well, I guess I'm done for the day.
No, I pack cans of LaCroix in my backpack when I go out in my man bag. They are clanking around in my bag. I got them, and
you bring them to restaurants and just open up your LaCroix I just need a glass of ice.
I bring them to a coffee shop back when that was a thing. Order a coffee, bust out a LaCroix to have as a little side drink. And
you used to chase your coffee with LaCroix?
I just don't care. whatever, but I was the same way. I remember, so I went to Brazil 8-9 years ago, 10 years ago, something like that. And so for whatever reason there, so this was in Rio, and I don't know if it's all Brazil, but they just drink fizzy water, bubbly water. They call it agua with gas, I guess. And yeah, no, it's funny.
That's the least appetizing way to say it.
I'm like, how do you guys, how are you all alive? All you drink is bubble water. Doesn't that dry you out and desiccate you? And now I'm wow, that's a paradise world. It's
can I go back immediately?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know what I've been thinking about?
What?
Dancing.
Oh yeah, just dancing by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Today's episode got me thinking about dancing.
Yeah. What kind of dancing? What's Brett's dance? Ideal dancing situation.
Well, for me, it conjures up middle school dances and being a wallflower and how in the gym. The guys and the girls would be oil and water, just staring at each other. And to me, that's bad. That's a bad memory. I don't thinking about dancing. I don't know. What do you think about?
I just remember being pushed onto the dance floor. Like one of those situations where like friends were like, you have to dance with so-and-so and just like pushing you
so much
like forcefully
too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you know, like who could dance with who. And if you didn't dance, you're a loser. And if you did dance and you look stupid, you're an even bigger loser. So like, it's just like a loss, you know, it's like a zero sum game there. Like there's no way, you know, no way out. But
yeah, yeah. It's the politics is real. And like, I remember like all the girls you would dance with, like it was their first name and then their last initial. So I'd be like, oh, you dance with Lindsay R and not Lindsay L, like, ooh, you know, it was like,
yeah, yeah.
That's what I remember too. That's what I think of when I think of dancing.
Yeah. And I remember, I just remember because sometimes we had the dances in the cafeteria in certain schools. So like, I just remember those big rows of like tables and stuff on the back walls as if it wasn't just the cafeteria that we eat in every day.
So when you smell tater tots to this day, you get triggered and like,
yeah, I just want warm rolls. Like everybody else is dancing. And I'm just like, can I just get an extra roll if I have like 30 extra cents, you know?
Oh God. I would smell like tater tots and just think of that. Just that awkwardness of just
so
middle school dancing.
So every time you go to like Sonic or something, you have like a flashback that you're just like, no, no, no.
No, no, I don't want to dance with Lindsay R. I want to dance with Lindsay L.
Oh, man.
But do you ever think about death?
Yeah, I mean, like that's the options, dance or death, you know? No, I don't. Also, by the way, you know what I do think of death? If any of you out there are listening to the background noise, if you hear a giant bomb going off and dogs going crazy, I live in Long Beach, California.
LBC.
Where apparently every day from... So if you don't know Long Beach, for those of you out there, I know we have some German listeners, some Australian listeners, some people all around the world. Mm. Long Beach, California is basically like if there were parties going on all the time and people set off bombs, otherwise known as fireworks, but they're like bombs. They're not fun. There's not like big crackly fun ones like during the finale. It literally, from June on through about mid-August... It's just bombs going off. Like, it is not fun. Little dogs hate it. And so if you hear that in the background, I apologize. I'm just trying not to die.
Hey,
so
Andy, well qualified to represent the LBC.
Exactly. But when it comes to dancing, I've never thought about how I would die from dancing.
Well, let's get into it because that's today's episode is it's kind of like a history episode. And I want to say... maybe 70% bullcrap.
So
this is a little setup. I want to give you a quick little tidbit. This is from John Waller, which was published in The Lancet. And The Lancet's been very naughty lately with COVID. They had to retract a paper because they're Russian stuff to publication. But they're a prestigious journal, so it is what it is. And for whatever reason, they published an article about the dancing plague of 1518. On Christmas Eve in the year 1021, 18 people gathered outside a church in the German town of Kolbicht and danced with wild abandon. The priest, unable to perform mass because of the irreverent din from outside, ordered them to stop. Ignoring him, they held hands and danced in a ring dance of sin, clapping, leaping, and chanting in unison. The enraged priest recorded a local chronicler, cursed them to dance for an entire year as punishment for their outrageous levity. It worked. Not until the following Christmas did the dancers regain control of their limbs. Exhausted and repentant, they fell into a deep sleep. Some of them never awoke.
Well, I don't know why. I think it just feels a little far-fetched that they danced nonstop for a year, you know, like, like, I don't know if anybody's ever like, tried to do anything that was, you know, exhausting and you can't dance for a year. I will put that out there. I think that maybe, they could like tap their foot for a year or like do a little head nod, you know, when like you forget to move your video game character and he just starts like tapping his foot and is like looking around
and slapping your hand on your thigh. I think they call that ham boning.
Yeah. I did. Like you can maybe play the spoons for a year, but like, I want to know like what kind of dancing was this, you know, like
I want to like, yeah, maybe like that goth kid shuffle dancing from like South Park. where they just sort of shuffle and they stare at the ground and they're like, life is so pointless.
Yeah, I feel like this guy, I mean, I don't know. And a lot of this episode is, I mean, it's, somebody wrote it down. So, I mean, we all know that if it's written down, then it's fact.
Yeah, and The Lancet has definitely not published, you know, anything that's ever been like bullcrap and taken back and maybe irreparably harmed the vaccine movement.
Yep.
So,
So he did this. He damned all these people to dance for a year, and some of them never recovered because he's a big meanie.
Mm-hmm.
But he also, it seems, set off a chain reaction of outbreaks of the dancing plague from then on.
Yeah.
So he's like the opposite of the Pied Piper. He like started it all and just let it go.
Priest Zero. See?
Yeah.
Like patient zero with a pre. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
They're funny when you have to explain them. Jokes are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for the next 600 years, villages across Europe experienced these bizarre outbreaks of what has come to be known as the Dancing Plague. This is something I had never heard about before researching for this episode. But it appears to be both a legitimate epidemiological phenomenon because it has its own WebMD page and at the same time totally mysterious and, like I said, possibly total bullcrap. But there definitely seems to be something there, and we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, it goes through history, and like I said, this guy might have set off like a wildfire of dancing. And so it says that in 1247, in German town of Erfurt, reports of unstoppable and sometimes fatal dancing. I'm just picturing like breakdance fighting from Zoolander here. But citizens would pour out of their houses and into the streets, where they began to writhe and whirl uncontrollably.
Ooh.
Shortly after, 200 people are said to have danced impiously on a bridge over the Mosel River in the Maastricht until collapsed, drowning them all. So they danced so hard that the bridge collapsed.
Or they just danced right over. Like, what are those animals that dance over the cliffs or, like, run over the cliffs? Like,
oh, lemmings.
Lemmings, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, fun fact. Did you know where that came from with lemmings? Oh, there we go. Do it again. Snapple fact. There we go.
Where the lemmings over the cliff came from?
Yeah.
No.
Ah, so this actually came from a Disney movie. Back in the day, because, like, back in the day, there wasn't the rules for, like, PETA and everything to, like murder animals. They just used to do it for film.
Yeah.
And they literally had lemmings, and they just, to film it, they would just have a lemming, like, a bunch of lemmings, and just throw them off the cliff. So they literally were just throwing lemmings one after the other over the cliff and filming it. To show, like, people following, you know, blindly over cliffs. They're just murdering them one and one, like, one after the other for no reason.
Everyone to think about that next time they go to Disneyland.
Also, fun fact, if you've seen the movie Milo and Otis, there wasn't just one Milo and Otis. There were tons of them because they had to film the river scene where the dog and the cat, like, go in, like, the little basket, and they're, like, really cute down the river. And apparently a ton of the Otises drowned because pugs aren't supposed to breathe underwater. So those are your fun, shiny facts for today.
Oh, I would have thought it, like, just because Walt Disney kept strangling them.
Or because, like, he's, like, the king of the pugs because he kind of looked like one.
Well, he was a Nazi, wasn't he?
He's a Nazi good person, that's for sure.
I don't know if that's true, but I don't know if the dancing plague is true, but, you know.
Exactly.
I'm gonna keep saying that because, just gonna put a little disclaimer there.
Yeah, so that was in 1247. So in 1347, more reports of terrible compulsion to dance that cross Western Germany and Northeastern France. Thousands of people were said to have danced in agony for days or weeks, screaming of terrible visions and imploring priests and monks to save their souls. Furthermore, a few decades later, the abbot of monastery near the city of Trier recalled an amazing epidemic in which a collection of hallucinating dancers hopped and leapt for as long as 6 months, some of them dying after breaking their ribs or loins.
Death by loin breakage.
Loin breakage does not sound fun.
Like, just dancing yourself to death. God. No.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I mean,
I'm picturing like the scene from like Party Monster and stuff where they're all like hopped up on drugs and they're just dancing forever until the sun comes up, but then it just never stops.
Yeah. I mean, basically Europe during this time was just the worst.
Like, yeah, just a bunch of dancing fools.
I mean, you're just dancing until your loins are ripping. You're dancing yourself off of bridges. You got bubonic plague flying at you. You got God knows what. You got mud in the streets.
You've got mud. I love how that's like, you're like, it was like the worst version of Coachella ever.
Oh, God. Just, yeah. So this is from the book The Black Death and the Dancing Mania by Justus Friedrich Karl Hecker. It's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Quote, they formed circles hand in hand and appearing to have lost all control over their senses, continued dancing, regardless of the bystanders, for hours together, in wild delirium, until at length they fell to the ground in a state of exhaustion. They then complained of extreme oppression and groaned as if in the agonies of death, until they were swathed in cloths bound tightly round their waists, upon which they again recovered and remained free from complaint until the next attack.
Whew. Okay, so as we say on this the show, not good.
Not good, but I think we're seeing a pattern here that Europe is afflicted with this dance and fools syndrome.
Yeah, and we're going to get into a little bit more of like specifics, but keep on going down the rabbit hole. So...
Mm-hmm.
What's next?
So this disease of sorts, or whatever this was, this condition, this bizarre dancing thing, continued to spread to towns in the Netherlands and Belgium and up and down the Rhine River, and that's in Europe. Some people called it the St. Vitus dance. We'll get into that in a second. A lot of this was steeped in like superstition and kind of closely intertwined with religious ideologies and stuff like that. So during the Middle Ages, church basically, played a large role in people's lives and blamed this bizarre thing on possession by the devil, or that people had been cursed by a saint. Some people also thought that this dancing was brought on by the bite of a spider, or that people were dancing themselves to death as a way to work out the poisons.
Imagine if that was Spider-Man's his superpower, that he just danced in front of people all the time.
Yeah,
that'd be the worst Spider-Man ever. He
wouldn't
be helpful at all.
Never mind sucking the poison out. Just dance, dance, man, dance. You're gonna die. Just do the boogie.
I mean, it makes sense because back in the day, like there were the priests and, pastors and everything were basically the scientists of their time.
Yeah.
Like, everybody turned towards them when they couldn't figure something out. They would be like, oh, well, why would God have done this? And they would just be like, this is why God would have done this. And everybody's like, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean,
God maketh continues... mud and God taketh away the mud. He can do everything. Yeah.
I mean, this continues on. So in 1491, several nuns were possessed by devilish familiars, which impelled them to race around like dogs, jump out of trees in imitation of birds or meow, and claw their way up the trunks of man in the manner of a cat.
Oh, those silly nuns.
So such possession epidemics were by no means confined to nunneries, but nuns were disproportionately affected.
Ooh, we call that a pattern in epidemiology.
Mm-hmm. And so over the next 200 years, in nunneries from Rome to Paris, hundreds were plunged into the states of frantic delirium, during which they foamed, screamed, and convulsed, sexually propositioned exorcists and priests, and confessed to having carnal relations with the devil or Christ.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, these nuns, man, I mean, it's a pretty thankless job as it is. But now they're dealing with the fact that they just cannot deal with, anything. And then their loins are breaking, and they just want the devil or Christ.
Nuns meowing and climbing up trees, and God, what a time to be alive.
I know.
Good thing the life expectancy was, like, 23, right?
Yeah, exactly. This was the only good news is that this was like there and gone in a few minutes.
Yeah.
So now we're going to get to the big one. So the big one here, the
Dancing
Plague.
This is like a brief history of the Dancing Plague sweeping across Europe.
So that's where there were a bunch of outbreaks. So at this point, they weren't surprised by outbreaks, but at the same time, they were completely not understood. Until this day, we still have no goddamn idea exactly why these things happen, but we'll get into a little bit more. We'll do some Brett talk as
we
think that may have happened.
Yeah.
So this the big one here is the Dancing Plague of Strasbourg, which is now part of France, but this was in 1518. Mm-hmm. So Strasbourg in the 1500s, so not the greatest of times. So the early 1500s, there were bitter winters, and many were even freezing to death. So already not the best, you know, not loving life. And so in 1517... called the bad year, tons of people were dying from malnutrition, starvation, and smallpox. So then,
among other things, yeah.
So all that's happening, and then they just went through the bad year. So
imagine,
they're like, finally,
you're in the you're in the Middle Ages, you're in Europe when like all this shit's happening, and like it's 1517 is so bad. Among all that, it gets its own the bad year title. It's that bad.
So 1517 was their 2020.
And so
they're like, oh man, 2021 is going to be great. 1518, you know, let's get out of this. And then it was an especially hot summer.
Mm-hmm.
So like super scorching hot. Imagine, you know, living in Palm Desert all the time with no Coachella. It's just awful.
All that dried up mud.
So religion played a big part in these people's lives. So, dancing equaled divine retribution. So people thought
a lot of this
highly.
Badness was, you know, like punishment or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So how did it start? So, Strasbourg's first person to be afflicted was Frau Trophia. And she began to dance and continued to dance and dance and dance without rest for six solid days. So she was a marathoner
was
of
a dancing.
Dancing
she, cool.
Exactly. She was setting the standard for dancing at the time.
I mean, you run nonstop.
Yeah, but I have to eat, you know? It sounds like she just kept going, which is a champion of sorts. I stop for, like, chips and sometimes, you know, some vitamin-style water and stuff, but she's just a trooper.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to save this for a second, but I want to bring this up. So she started dancing, and the funniest thing at the time was, by the way, they didn't believe people. Like, they thought that it must have been an issue. And the funniest thing is the guy who was in charge of everything, this physician called Paracelsus, wrote that he believed that Frau Trophia kept dancing because her husband told her to do something that she did not care for. He continued that in order to make sure that her actions had their full effect and the likeness of a disease, she hopped and jumped high, sang and lulled, and did whatever it was that her husband hated worst of all. And if so, basically, he thought that she was like doing performance art to piss off her husband. Mm. But by day six, her bones were showing out of her feet.
Oh.
So, like, she was already, you know, that was going on with her. But, like,
I'll
that's
show
how
you
ridiculous.
Husband. See
yeah,
my foot
she
bones?
Hated her. Exactly. I can't walk anymore. I shall show you.
Gaze upon my nubbins that were my feet.
Exactly. It's not bad enough that these people are wearing, like, wooden clogs to dance in.
They'll make me spit out my LaCroix.
But so like she's dealing with all this, and after 6 days she passes out. She's you know she comes back too and starts dancing again, and so she was sent to the shrine of Saint Vitus. So Saint Vitus, a Christian saint from Sicily, became associated with uncontrollable dancing in the 1400s, and people would go to the shrine to ask for help.
Now we're looking at a picture of this guy painting, and I want to say I was in woodshop with this guy in high school. Like, that's
he looks
he
so
looks.
Sad.
He looks
like the kid who was first out in dodgeball every time. Like, he just got hit in the face, and he's just like, I'm not running the mile, no matter what you say. He just looks very sad. He has a palm frond in one hand.
Yeah, he looks to me like, I mean, his eyes are way too close together. He's just all wrong, and he just looks like the guy who just comes into woodshop, just reeking of weed and just, you know, making a birdhouse and smelling kind of like dust.
Yeah. And
that's,
so
I hope I didn't make him mad. I don't want to dance.
Yeah. I agree with you, but at the same time, in solidarity, I'm going to say jury's out on that so that I don't have to dance.
Yeah.
But at the time, Paracelsus was saying, and he wrote down that within a week, 34 people had joined her. And by the end of the month, 400 people out of a town of 20,000. so if I'm doing the math right, is that 5%? Is that 5% or
0.5%? I did the incidence rate
25%,
on this, and it's for every 100 people in the town, two were dancing
fools. Okay, all right, yeah, so whatever percentage that is, I'm a math magician, I do great math, I do the best math.
I think if it's 2 out of 100, it's 2%, right?
Yeah, exactly, what he said, he went to grad school, so he wins. and so the crazy thing about this is, like, during all of this, the height of the mania, 15 residents were dying a day from strokes or heart attacks or sheer exhaustion. And so the biggest thing here is the thing that I found was interesting, and you guys could go check out Jennifer Wright's book, Get Well Soon. I know I've talked about it on the podcast before, but I do think it's a really funny book. She's phenomenal at, like, just keeping things really short and succinct. Each one of the audiobook chapters is about a half hour, so it's just enough without, like, inundating you with too much information. But the interesting thing here was they didn't react like, yeah, that one guy, Paracelsus, was kind of a dick and thought that people were doing it to dance and, like, show off. But for the most part, the townspeople actually cared for these people. So at first, when they were dancing and they couldn't figure it out, the townspeople actually hired musicians, easy for me to say, right? Musicians and, like, professional dancers to keep them company. So, like, instead of, like, letting these people, like, you know, like, if you think about, like, the Salem witch trials and, like, other situations where people were just going crazy, they murdered them. They were just like, oh, you're a witch. You're crazy. We need you to die. But they, like, tried to help them as much as possible. And so they actually, after that, because they thought, they were like, oh, clearly there's a real problem, they outlawed dancing. They outlawed dancing so that they, like, wouldn't be basically, like, making fun of these people. They even made it illegal to dance, but the only people who could dance is if you had a wedding. If you had a wedding, but even at the wedding, tambourines and drums were shunned a little bit because they were afraid that it might incite another outbreak.
Oh, yeah. I learned about that in grad school, yeah. It's either the coleslaw or the tambourine that starts 90% of all...
Listen, the cowbell is also suspect at all times. But so the funny thing is if this was the one thing they talked about is that if this was psychosomatic and these people were just, like, sad or, like, they just, like, had a psychotic break, just the pure act of kindness seemed to help them, like, get over this. They sent them to St. Vitus and all that, but it is interesting to see basically one community's reaction to it in order to, like, actually help these people.
Killing them with kindness. Or not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
or not. Saving them with
saving
kindness.
Saving them,
The Patch Adams way. But you have a different theory that you read, and this is pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the city, basically, like, the towns then were ran by the rich people. Definitely not how things go, you know, nowadays.
It's yeah, no, like there's not a certain percentage of people that, like, control everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're doing real good. So
we've come a long way.
Yeah, well,
in 500 years, we have really knocked it out of the park. You know.
Well, at least we're living longer, so we can.
Yeah,
we can,
for sure. So we can dwell on it for longer.
We can dwell longer. Yeah. Anyway, these city leader councilor folks, you know, they consulted with the local doctors to try to figure out what was going on, and they came to the conclusion that this dancing must be the result of overheated blood in the brain.
Oh, that sounds plausible. It sounds like, you know, just boiling your blood as you do, and it just got through the blood-brain barrier, and you just went crazy?
Yeah, they had a diagnosis, overheated blood in the brain. And, of course, what do you do when you have overheated blood in the brain? Well, they prescribed the most appropriate treatment that they could think of, which was more dancing.
That's such a ridiculous thing. Like if somebody had cancer and you're like, you know what you need? More cancer.
Yeah, it'll cancel itself out. That's just basic math.
Oh, you know? Man.
Just, okay, I'll see your dancing with more dancing.
Yeah.
So what that has to do with overheated blood in the brain, I didn't study humors in grad school, but
yeah.
You know, humors like bile and anyway. so these city leaders, counselors, basically to implement their plan of allowing these people to dance more, cleared out the open air markets in the town. They commandeered guild halls, which I assume is some kind of hall, and erected stages next to the old town horse fair.
this
sounds fun.
Yeah, this is more of that stuff where they're like, you know what? Yeah, we should keep dancing and just like, let's mm-hmm. do everything we can to keep them dancing. Like,
yeah. So they escorted all the kind of crazed and frantic dancers onto these, you know, I guess, dance halls that they made. And with the idea that, you know, if they kept them dancing, if they kept them moving frantically enough, that they would just like shake off all that overheated blood sickness. They would just dance it out of their system.
Real Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ooh. And
I hate me. Everybody, you can stop listening now, or just listen to Brett for the rest of the podcast.
That's a different kind of humor. We need to bleed you of your humors.
Exactly.
Yeah, the funny kind. So they, you know, these were. There was a lot of like kind of kindness here. Yeah, I guess like they hired pipers and drummers, and they even hired strong men to keep the dancing fools upright. By clutching their bodies as they whirled and swayed in the gilded halls and horse fair stages. Oh God, what a time to be alive.
Imagine if that's your job. Like you've worked out all of your life to be like the biggest guy in town. Like, you know what you need to do?
Mm-hmm.
Get punched and scratched and kicked by these people for days at a time.
Oh yeah.
You know, cause there's no way these were like controlled dances. It's not like they were like in unison and they were like doing the Cotton Eye Joe. Like these people were probably like throwing bows. It was, I imagine like a pit where like, you know, like straight edge kids, like throwing kicks and, you know,
and like
all
probably
that fun
big
stuff.
Gnarly, like fingernails. Cause it was like 15, 18 and,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah, like bag lady nails. Ugh.
Oh, just
Ooh.
Scratching and gouging and squealing
mm-hmm.
and all.
And they got paid.
God.
I bet they got paid in like one pint of like malt whiskey per day or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man.
I mean, what's a strong man going to do in the year of our Lord 1518?
All right.
So all this dancing was happening, and again, remember, it was this was in the summer and a particularly hot year. So like, you know, if you got overheated blood on the brain, I'm at a bit of a loss for how this helps, but they gave it a try. They tried. So you know, as poets do, the poets were the kind of archivists of the time. They wrote, you know, they kind of put this on the record. One poem from the time said that in their madness people kept up their dancing until they fell unconscious and many died. This led the town council to sense that it had made a bit of a mistake,
mm-hmm.
that maybe this wasn't the best course of action. Okay. And so they decided, instead of this this boiling blood kind of situation, that the dancers were instead suffering from the holy wrath, you know, instead of the sizzling brain condition. So they opted instead for this period of enforced penance and banned music and dancing in public altogether. So they went from like prescribing forced dancing to no dancing.
Yeah, it's footloose backwards is basically what they did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they, as a way of kind of enforcing this penance, they would drag these dancers to the shrine of St. Vitus, this this kind of woodshop looking dude.
Geek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they, you know, a lot of their feet were all bloodied and just probably looked terrible.
Mangled.
And here's, like, I don't understand this part. They took them to the shrine and they stuffed their bloodied feet into red shoes. Like, I don't understand that part.
Yeah, all I can think of is the fact that, like, maybe they couldn't see the blood coming out of their feet anymore, so, like, they would dance more, continued, because they wouldn't notice the blood, or, like, was red for stop.
That just, like, that left me wanting. Like, I was reading about this, and it just said, like, in red shoes, period. And I'm like, and? Like, and? What about the red shoes? What's going on?
Is this where we got, like, Dorothy? Like, is this where it came from? Like, the red shoes, you know? Like, is this all part of it? There was also actually a movie, I guess, they said they wrote based on this, called The Woman with the Red Shoes, where she, like, puts on these red shoes and can't stop dancing. And it was actually, I guess, you know, based off of this situation. So,
everything.
If you
want
to go check off the red shoes, where
everything
this is from.
Has a sad and depressing origin, basically. Walt Disney, it's about strangling pugs and Dorothy's red shoes were.
Hey, we're just bringing you hot facts, okay? Hey, boiling hot, you know, blood facts, okay?
We don't make the history. We just report it. So, that's kind of like a brief summary of this weird plague. Like, plagues are usually pretty weird and interesting, but like this one I had never personally heard of, at all. Like you mentioned it. We started researching it, and I'm like,
again,
I've never heard about this.
This comes straight from my girlfriend Lizzie. She like is super into all the, you know, crazy like podcasts and everything. And so she read the book, and she let me know about it. So I actually a few months ago had heard about this, but like really, like we're just left with a ton of questions. Like at this point, you know, like.
Yeah.
Like, why did they prescribe more dancing, like, to scramble the brains? Like, why were the dancers made to wear red shoes? Why do people dance themselves to death? You know, like, and they also, by the way, they also bled people out. Like, they would cut them and try to bleed the craziness out.
Yeah, yeah, that was, like, the balancing the humors. If they thought, like, you had too much blood, you just get rid of some blood.
Yeah, the old the old bloodletting where you're just like, you know what? You just make too much blood. And then when you go pale, you're cured because obviously when you go pale, you're no longer hot. It doesn't mean that you're exsanguinated and you're about to die. But if you made it back, you know, they were right. So, I mean, they're the, you know,
medical
the priests are always right.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know.
But so, Brett, so you looked into a little bit more of the side of things of why it may have happened, like the real story behind the story. So
it's, you know, there's basically, to long story short, we don't know. Nobody knows. There are some theories, and we're going to talk about two of the main ones. A lot of sources, and there's a few other podcast episodes about it. They don't do as good of a job as we do.
I mean, we're the best.
Yeah.
Top notch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have literally dozens of listeners that would support us on
tens of dozens, okay? Don't sell us short, okay?
Yeah. So the most popular theory, the one that you'll read about the most and listen to the most, and the one we're going to cover the least because we're rebels like that. We go
counterculture.
You go high, we're going to go low. You go you go dancing, we're going to go other kind of dancing.
that was the best.
Yeah. So the common or the popular theory, and again, none of this is established as like the cause, but was fungus. Fungus Among Us is the name of Exhibit A. That basically all these dancers may be suffering from fungal poisoning, from ergot, which is a toxic mold that grows on damp rye. Rye was used in, you know, bread and various other food stuffs and beverages across medieval Europe. When it would get damp, and I'm picturing you know, damp you know, kind of castles and whatnot.
Yeah.
And
just, people just like for whatever reason throwing loaves of bread at people. I don't know why they used to do that all the time. They just like throw some bread at the ground and people would pick it up and eat it.
Just nuns running up and down the halls, meowing, and just people dancing in red shoes with blood gushing out and throwing damp rye bread at each other.
Exactly.
What a time. So this toxic mold, which leads to ergotism, basically it produces this kind of chemical that affects you similarly to LSD, which can this kind of toxic poisoning can produce spasms and hallucinations. So the plot thickens, because that sounds kind of like what's happening.
Well, but I did look into this a little bit when we were talking about this, and it would seem, though, that like back then they knew about ergot poisoning. So, like, if they saw those symptoms, they would probably be like, oh, shit, let's get rid of all these grains and, like, start fresh, or, like, get rid of the bad bread, you know, and you'd see it, like,
or
drop
just
off.
More bad bread, because apparently that was their solution. Just make him,
just
beat him with bad bread. Yeah,
yeah,
just
exactly.
Hit him over the head with bad bread.
Yeah, ingest more ergot is the cause. But I would feel like if this was truly the problem, that first off, everybody in the each family would have it. So it wouldn't be like, so that, you know, Frau, who's trying to show off and, you know, tell her husband what for, he also would have been dancing right with her.
Right.
And then what would have, like, Paracelsus said, you know? Yeah. How would he figure that one out?
And there's, like, a limit to, like, this tripping, right? Like, I mean, these people were dancing until their feet turned into nubs.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
That's got to be longer than, like, LSD, right? Unless they're,
yeah,
like,
what's the half-life of this drug?
I don't know. Like, I've never done ergot or LSD, so I don't know. But I mean, it just doesn't quite fit. Like, it explains part of it, but it doesn't explain the length. It doesn't, for me, it doesn't fit the, like, why they dance until they're dead, you know? Maybe it explains, like, the fact that maybe they're dancing and twitching and acting a fool, but not dancing themselves to death, right? That seems something else.
So what do you, so your number one theory is what?
Mass hysteria.
Ah, yes. Crowd mentality, mob mentality.
Mm-hmm. Mass hysteria. It's all in the mind.
Okay.
So we're going to break this down now, and we'll post the sources that we used for this, but there's a pretty good, I think, argument to be made that this is kind of this psychological phenomenon of, yeah, like you said, crowd kind of thinking. So these outbreaks were occurring in towns and cities along the Rhine River in Europe. Fancy. And you know, the rivers were used for travel, merchants, pilgrims, soldiers. And this is how news and religious beliefs traveled as well. So, like, if this kind of weird phenomenon was happening upriver, like, news would spread downriver that, like, this weird thing was happening. And, like,
okay.
I imagine it's like, you know, the seed gets planted in people's heads. Like, oh, did you hear what happened up the river? Like, they're dancing and, you know, whatever. I hope that doesn't happen down here. You know, like,
yeah,
it's planting the seed.
Well, I feel like that even happens with regular, like everyday, you know, diseases. I mean, even, like, you think about COVID. Like, I remember when it first happened, so many people immediately were like, well, I was sick in January, February, December.
Yeah.
I think I had COVID. Or, like, people would
everybody
be like,
everybody thinks they had COVID, yeah.
So immediately thereafter, everybody's like, maybe I have a little bit of a tickle in my throat. I think I'm a little sick. And it's just like, calm down for a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Like, when I was, like, in fourth grade and I was convinced I had the bubonic plague because I'd just learned about it in school.
Yeah, or one time when I opened one of those salicylic, like, acid, like, packets that you're supposed to keep, you know, sealed, and it says if ingested you will die, and I was, like, a dumb kid, and I, like, put it on my finger and I, like, licked it, and then I was like, I'm gonna die in minutes, and I freaked out, but I was fine, you know.
Time I pushed my thumb into the cigarette lighter in a car.
Oh yeah.
Hurt real bad. Anyway,
one time I stubbed my toe, and it was
ooh,
pretty rough too.
On this episode of Stuff That Hurts. Basically, the idea here is that based on where these outbreaks were occurring, there was, like, some geographic spread potential that it was occurring along the river. So, like, this idea could have been, like, lodged in the kind of cultural kind of unconsciousness or consciousness of the whole region, that this saint, Saint Vitus, I think I'm saying that right. I don't know. I don't care.
Vitus or Vitus. It's V-I-T-U-S.
Yeah.
If you care to correct us, send us an email over at viralloadpod@gmail.com and tell us we're a bunch of idiots.
Yeah.
And also give us a review.
Five stars.
Five stars.
So, yeah, that, you know, this saint could basically punish sinners by making them dance. So this belief started spreading. There's some kind of evidence. There's physical evidence to support this. There's a painting in a cathedral in Cologne. This is 200 miles downstream from Strasbourg that basically dramatizes this curse. There's an image of St. Vitus along with three men joylessly dancing, which is, I think, just called dancing, and their faces wearing the kind of what they call divorced from reality expressions of basically being delirious. And
Brett at a seventh grade dance is what they're saying.
Yeah, they're just describing me in seventh grade.
And me in every other grade well, because dances were awful, awful things.
Yeah.
I'm just glad we didn't have like the Sadie Hawkins dance or one of those dances where you like had to ask somebody. That wasn't a thing.
Oh, we,
like,
you know, I, like, we you had that. I had that.
Really?
Yeah.
You guys had like, you had to
the
formally
girls,
ask someone?
The girls would ask the guys.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Guess
we didn't
who,
have
guess
that.
Who didn't was... go to the Sadie Hawkins dance?
Somebody who's not on the podcast, because Brett definitely had a date. You know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely not.
But I mean, yes, I mean, you know, belief in the supernatural agencies can have effects on our behaviors, right? So
a little bit. I mean you remember Heaven's Gate, that cult?
No, I, what is it?
Heaven's Gate, the cult in San Diego. You
no,
don't know
no,
about that?
No, I'm not from around here. What I have no. Didn't that didn't get to the East Coast? It's not like San Diego matters to Boston
it
people.
Was
like
the
what
biggest
happened?
Cult suicide in the United States.
Wait,
like,
was that
was,
the Jello one where they all like took shots together?
No,
and, like,
that
then...
was Jonestown. That was
okay. That's
in,
what I thought.
No, this was they all lived in. They were rented out a mansion in San Diego, and in a really like wealthy part of the area, and the Halley-Bopp comet was in the night sky, and they basically were this cult that thought that there was a UFO spaceship trailing behind the comet, and that the only way that they could ascend to the spaceship and then like be shepherded off to paradise was to all kill themselves. And this was in Rancho Santa Fe, and this was like, you know, they were all like laying on the bunk beds with the Nike shoes and like the purple like blankets over them. And
what?
How
no,
the hell
is,
have you never
I
heard
feel
of
like,
this?
Listen, I came from like a really poor town in Massachusetts. We this didn't care like, what like a bunch of weird affluent white people were doing in their bunk beds at their mansion.
Okay.
Like, I feel like
Google,
that didn't make
Google
it to
Google Marshall
like, the...
Applewhite. Google Marshall Applewhite.
Hold on a second. We're doing this right now live on the pod. Marshall Applewhite. So Marshall Applewhite. If you
of
hear me
Heaven's
typing,
Gate
that's
cult.
Exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
Marshall Applewhite. It changed it to Appleton, so let's do that.
Oh, is it Appleton?
So he looks like a crazy
cult leader
guy.
Yeah.
So he, I mean, I don't. He kind of looks, he's got a crazy looking face in a lot of these. When he's like got a buzzed haircut, he kind of looks like the sergeant from what is it? What's the movie with like Gomer Pyle and all of that? The guy who's like screaming at everyone. He kind of looks like that guy.
The guy from Full Metal Jacket.
There we go. Yeah, he's kind of got that kind of a face to him.
But
yeah,
a eunuch.
Oh, yeah. Really?
They would. That was part of their thing.
Their shtick.
The men castrated themselves.
Oh, that's a weird shtick to have as a cult. I felt like part of the cult was always like getting everybody on board for like group love type stuff. Isn't that like very culty?
Their earthly bodies were just like vessels transport sacks of meat, and in order to transcend to the higher plane and get taken away on the spaceship that was behind the comet, they had to kill themselves. It's interesting. Supernatural agency can have effects on our behavior. See, that whole tangent had a point.
People can just like basically, you know, be overtaken by the spirit, or
and it's like
group at least their belief anyways.
I mean, this crazy guy Marshall had, you know, everyone castrating themselves and killing themselves because he had them all convinced that there was a UFO trailing behind a comet. Like, This is what's happened. Like, this is this weird kind of groupthink, like tied in with religious fervor and probably being afraid and being covered in mud.
It always comes back to mutt.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of research that supports this, that, like, you know, in addition to the Heaven's Gate cult, which I think they still operate a website, by the way. There's like two cult members that
didn't do it,
so they could stay behind basically to like run, like continue to run the operation.
Designated survivors of the cult.
They like, yeah, it's still like a crappy like 1990s like website. It looks like they haven't maintained it. Like, anyway. This isn't a cult podcast. Go listen to the last podcast on the left for that.
Yeah, or a cult podcast. A few of my friends actually are on a podcast called Cult Podcast, which is actually pretty great. So
ooh, what's
check
it about?
I think it's about cults.
Okay.
It was actually just in Oprah's magazine or whatever. It's like top podcast to listen to.
Dang.
We'll be there too soon, Oprah. I know you're listening, but you're just like waiting until you like really pop to give us that kind of the
Tell
Oprah.
Tell us what you want, Oprah. Tell us what disease you want us to cover.
Yeah, and then you just give us a car, and then you get a car, and I get a car. And
you get a disease. You get a disease. So anyway, this, you know, this concept of being raised in an environment of basically, like, belief allows, you know, this concept of spiritual possession to be taken very seriously. And it basically primes people who are susceptible to enter this kind of dissociative mental state. And there's further evidence even after this thing in Strasbourg that European convents in the 1700s saw this with their nuns. And basically it was reported that nuns would writhe, convulse, foam at the mouth, make obscene gestures and propositions, climb trees and meow like cats, like we said.
Yeah.
And, you know, they basically lived in these echo chambers, these communities that would encourage them to obsess about being sinful, and like they were basically just being steeped and marinated in mystical, like, supernaturalism. And they would be convinced that, you know, demons had entered their souls, and this would prime them for this dissociative state. So like anytime they had a bad thought or a naughty thought, those naughty nun thoughts, they would you know, blame it on demons, and this would get them all going and whatnot.
Yeah, that reminds me of, what was that there was that documentary called Something Camp. It was like about the kids who are like in like Bible camp or whatever.
Oh,
and
yeah,
they like
I saw
have
that.
Them like speaking in tongues
yeah,
all
yeah,
the time,
very disturbing.
And like
yeah.
it's super, and like these kids like don't even understand like what's going
no.
on, but then they like are crying because they think God's yeah. gonna smite them, but they're like five. So
yeah.
like, what do they
well,
do?
That's exactly,
like,
yeah. They're little unshaped bits of clay. And
Jesus camp. There we go.
Jesus camp. Yeah, I did see that. That was disturbing.
So,
yeah.
So
yeah. So that, you know, that's this idea that like this kind of they had this curse of Saint Vitus, this saint who they were convinced was basically cursing people to do this thing. And so this belief was spreading, and, you know, people became really quick to assume that this saint was mad and that he was causing this affliction. And if you were a devout believer, if you were a true believer, you basically believed that this saint was targeting you. And this might compel you to enter like this trance-like state. And I think would explain more or better why people would dance for days and like maybe dance themselves to death compared to like the LSD kind of effects of ergot.
Okay.
So I think this also explains why, like, if this is a mass like psychogenic illness, would explain why it engulfs so many people. Because, like, not everyone's going to be eating that much rye bread because it was poor times. Not everybody had that much rye bread to go around. But everyone could be psychogenic illness, you know?
Yeah, well, and you even say like, in 1517 was described as the very bad year. So there's, like, crop failure. So there wasn't a lot of bread around.
And everyone
so, like,
was
on top
all
of the fact,
emotionally damaged and horrified and just, like, you know, husks of human beings. They were ready to go, ready for a freak out.
And it's interesting when we talk about like being in like a trance-like state, because like when they're saying like they've been they start dancing and they're doing fine and they're doing their jiggity jig and just dancing around in circles. But if it's anything
moon,
like and like clawing trees, but like if it's anything like like, if you do long distance running, like when I'm doing like a 100-mile race or whatever, there is a point like in the middle where I can't remember like really what happened from like mile 30 to 40. Like I just kind of get in this zone and just keep going. And people are like, oh, what do you think about? And I'm like, I don't even remember. Like, I don't remember that portion. But this is to the extreme. Like, this is, like, weeks on end sometimes. So, like, I don't get where it goes from, like, a trance-like state to literally, like, your feet breaking and bones being exposed.
Well, you don't remember because, on mile 30, you just start meowing.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
running
that's
and
what
meowing
it is.
And, like, licking your paws, yeah.
That's why my hands hurt. I'm just running on my hands.
Yeah. Like, why... Why do I taste mouse? Why do I have all these dead mice in my pocket?
Exactly. Because
you're a cat.
Oh, man.
Oh, Oprah's coming for us. Yeah, like you said, Strasbourg was, this was rough times. This was a bad time. There was disease everywhere. Crop failures were causing bread prices to skyrocket. Highest levels of bread pricing in a generation.
Just gouging them when they're hurting, you know?
Yes. So there's not enough ergot to go around. There's, you know, there's a lot of holes in that, their theory. So this led to a lot of people starving and, you know, just kind of general misery. And then you had all this disease, you know, the classics like leprosy and plague, you know, made friends with these terrifying new diseases like syphilis.
What a bad time.
God, you just, this is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah. And like, be appreciative of your antibiotics nowadays, everyone.
Yeah, you're welcome, science. And, you know, orphanages, hospitals, shelters, they were all overflowing with desperate people. General widespread misery is how I would sum it up. These made for ideal conditions to imagine that there was an angry God and that St. Vitus was pissed. Right?
yeah. I mean, he doesn't look particularly happy ever in any of the photos, but at this time, he's definitely not happy.
It's reminds me of that Family Guy where the guy had eyes that were too close together. And he's like, well, you may mock my eyes being too close together, but at least I only have to buy one pair or like one goggle or like half a
pair
of sunglasses.
He's like a minion. He's like a minion, and all he needs is like one glasses. Yeah.
Eyes are too close together. So speaking of nuns on the run.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love this next section that Brett threw together called Nuns on the Run. So I have not read this, so inform me. Yeah. What's up with the nuns?
So this is like kind of tangentially, like this is offering more support to this idea of like kind of religiosity mixed with like hard times, mixed with kind of like the echo chamber of living in austere kind of harsh conditions. And I call this segment Nuns on the Run. Sounds fun.
All right, let's get in it.
So, you know, nuns were sheltered. I'm not an expert on nunneries or nun life, but I imagine, they're kind of like, you know, kind of confined and they're doing their nun stuff and they're kind of sheltered from the day-to-day kind of indignities of the time in these nunneries. But they could also become like toxic psychological environments, especially if you're, you know, basically sheltering a place with, you know, like harsh other nuns, I guess. Like,
well, I mean, think about the fact that we just sheltered in place for like 6 weeks and people went out of their goddamn minds.
Yeah.
These people knowingly go like they are contractually obligated to be celibate for their entire lives, and then they're stuck with people who are being celibate as well forever.
Yeah.
Like imagine the, like, I mean, I don't know. I'm guessing in a nunnery, if there's that many nuns being nuns, there's probably a few people you don't like, and you're stuck with them forever.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can't go outside because there's plague and there's leprosy and there's mud and
syphilis.
Everything. Yeah. So you know, the nuns are basically consigned to live out their lives in quiet contemplation. And a lot of them were there basically the wishes of their parents. They were not, you know, doing this kind of piety on their own accord. You know, not all of them, but some, you know, they weren't all like there voluntarily. And these kind of conditions were difficult for them to get out of. So they were, you know, kind of trapped, and they were in this environment that made them kind of tormented by feelings of falling short, if they were like less than completely pious or whatever, these exacting standards of holiness imposed by their environment would lead a lot of them to live in fear that they were going to hell because they had like a random stray impure thought or whatever, or maybe they did something naughty.
Again, that goes back to like people talking, those kids talking in tongues and being like, God has forsaken me. Like, I'm the worst.
Mm-hmm.
When like, I mean, these women are literally living out their lives in the sanctity of like God or, you know, whatever they, you know, whatever gods they believe in. And still that to them, like at some point, because they had one bad thought or, you know, one impure thought, that's the end of it. They've already broken their like contract. So now they're like the worst.
They're on
the
like psychological thin ice.
Times to begin with.
They're just ready to crack, you know?
Yeah, and then 1517 happens, and, you know, everything else
that,
is going on.
Oh, that year. Yeah. So there's a famous example of this kind of thing. The Mother Superior, which I guess is like the head nun of the nunnery, of the Loudun Nunnery in southern France, she basically became infatuated with a local priest. Father Grandier, this was in the year 1627, which matters not at all. It was these random dates kill me.
It was a long, long time ago in a galaxy far away.
So she said, quote, "When I did not see him, I burned with desire for him."
This sounds like one of those paperback books you find in the grocery store your mother buys when you're a kid, and you're like, I wonder what book that is.
Tawdry nunnery literature. So because of these feelings that she was having for old Father Grandier, I wonder how close his eyes were together, she felt overwhelmingly worthless and this kind of strong sense of guilt. So this caused her to fall into a dissociative state during which she repeatedly accused the good father of plotting with Satan to make her lust after him. Because, you know, it wasn't just like her being a person. The guy was plotting with the devil. And that's what made her have these thoughts.
Okay. You know? She wasn't just lusty. She was, he was
mm-hmm.
the worst.
So, within a few days, she got other nuns on board, who joined her in finger pointing at the priest. This led to an official investigation by the Inquisition. And as was custom at the time, the good father was burnt alive.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, I got the hots for this guy. Let's burn him alive.
Yeah. Hot way to go for that hot nun
hot,
feeling.
Hot take.
Mm-hmm.
That's that's so crazy that literally they're pushed to the point where they think everything is so impure that they, instead of like dealing with the fact that they are having carnal urges, they then like, she literally let a guy die because she just like couldn't have sex. Like that's a crazy thing to think about.
Well, she didn't, it just sounds like she just, when he wasn't around, she thought about him.
Like, yeah.
And that got him burned alive. So
this guy, what do you think his last thoughts were? Like, just what the fuck? Like, what? Like the whole time he's got to just be like, what are you talking about? Like, this is like when you see somebody and you think you're like, I don't know, like you like them at a bar and then they just walk out and you're like, oh, that person's the worst. Like, I don't understand. Like, there was no connection. There's no nothing. Like, this guy just died for no reason other than the fact that she was just a crazy lady.
Yeah. So, it makes sense that these sheltered nuns who are kind of separated from human intimacy could, you know, this could trigger like this kind of collective breakdown, like what happened here. And there's this, you know, these documented cases of these dissociated nuns, which sounds like a punk band or something.
Yeah.
Dissociated nuns. Hello, we are the dissociated nuns. And we are here to behave with alarming lewdness. And they would behave with alarming lewdness. That's the name of their tour. We're the dissociated nuns, and this is the behaving with alarming lewdness tour.
And they're lifting their habits is their first single off the album.
The lewdness would include lifting their habits, which is like their nun swag, and simulating copulation. I'm just going to leave it there. And giving their demons names such as Dog's Dick.
That's crazy. That is.
I read this in a
punk.
Book online, so it's all real.
This is we all know if it's online, it's in a book, it's real. So we will have that in the show notes if you want to look up that Brett wasn't just having like a weird psychotic episode himself just now and just saying Dog's Dick. That's a thing that was in a book.
Yeah. I think what we're hopefully starting to see, or what I see as a well-trained, well-seasoned epidemiologist man about town, is that patterns are starting to emerge. That these kind of strange possession events or striking religious places and institutions, and that men ended up being far less a victim to mass diabolical possession than women. And I think that speaks to the kind of misogynistic, oppressed kind of mentality that would push the women over the edge, right? Like they were primed to be kind of stressed out, and they were having more pressure placed on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. And I mean, back in the day there too, they were responsible for, you know, all the meals, everything, and mm-hmm. you know, doing all the housework and all that fun stuff. And then on top of that, they're not allowed to have any thoughts that are, you know, even remotely impure. Mm-hmm. With all this religiosity happening.
Because anything bad that they did was, having to do with the devil or demons or wrathful saints. And there was this misogynistic belief that early modern women were imbued with this idea that they were tainted heirs of Eve and that they were more liable to succumb to Satan because of it. So primed and ready for a good dance off.
Yeah, who was I was trying to look for? There was a thing where who was it? There was a guy who said something like, "Wasn't Paracelsus? Whores and scoundrels were afflicted because their thoughts were free, lewd, and impertinent, full of corrupt sexual images." But basically, some guy basically said that if women didn't exist, there would be no like. Right here, got it. Aha. Malleus Maleficarum claimed, "If the world could be rid of women, we should not be without God in our intercourse. Witchcraft comes from carnal lust, which is in women insatiable. See Proverbs 30, there are three things that are never satisfied. Yea, a fourth thing, which says not, it is enough, that is the mouth of the womb. Wherefore, for the sake of fulfilling their lust, they consort even with devils. Witchcraft is high treason against God's majesty, and so they are to be put to torture." Basically, women like sex, so they're evil.
They sound like the original like incels, you know? Like
yeah, those involuntary, they are.
Involuntary celibates, like Elliot Rodger, and all those goons that like talk like that, you know?
Yeah, they're like, it's a woman's fault that I am just repulsive as a human being and I have no soul.
But what about the day of retribution?
Lastly, we have mass psychogenic illness.
Yeah, I think that's like the medical term or one of them that's like kind of given to this, that like this collective occurrence of physical symptoms and related beliefs among, you know, more than basically a group of people when you don't have like a pathogen to explain the behavior. So like when there's not a toxic element or a pathogen explaining it, it is mass psychogenic illness. And this kind of mass anxiety or hysteria is, you know, basically a sudden expression of intense anxiety in response to a false threat. So this is even more, you know, continues to be documented like even today where people maybe perceive or afraid of poisoning or exposure to toxic chemicals triggers kind of like a mass stress reaction like fainting or nausea or weakness even in the absence of actual chemicals or poisons. Like a lot of people will maybe think that they've been poisoned or whatever, And there are more examples of this in schools. And this, we're talking like the 1900s, like not that long ago, that, you know, there have been case studies where students suffer from like mass dizziness and nausea and spasms and, you know, girls fainting and all this kind of stuff, which sounded like middle school to me. But anyway, this would usually occur in schools because of this kind of oppressed kind of groupthink kind of situation, I guess.
Yeah, and so I know, again, like Jennifer Wright talked about this briefly, but in like 1962, several girls at a mission school near, I'm going to mess this up, but Lake Tanganyika or Yika, T-A-N-G-A-N-Y-I-K-A, why am I spelling this out? Nobody cares. Developed a compulsion
it's good enough
to
for government work, right?
Yeah, exactly. Developed a compulsion to laugh and cry by turns. So basically, like, it was like a chain reaction throughout the classes that girls were like laughing uncontrollably and then crying. The affliction soon spread
like
to neighboring
middle school. It's just middle school.
Yeah,
it's called puberty.
So the affliction soon spread to neighboring populations. Similar outbreaks of laughing have been recorded in both Zambia and Uganda. And in 2006, around 600 students in an emotionally austere all-girls school, again, just all girls, again, stop doing this to people, in Mexico City, developed paralysis and nausea lasting days or weeks.
So it's worldwide. It's a pandemic.
And then in North Carolina in 2002, a dozen pupils experienced seizures or paroxysmal, is that right? Paroxysmal?
I don't actually know what that is.
Paroxysmal episodes.
North Carolina.
Episodes. Over the course of 4 months, victims received extensive medical treatment before a failure to identify a pathogen leads to diagnosis of mass hysteria. So basically MPI.
It's a sudden attack or spasm.
Ah, so there we go. So like it basically looks like they're having like seizures and tics. Got it.
Yeah, why didn't they just say that?
Yeah, a bunch of jerks making me sound like a silly, silly person. And I think I said that word right 4 times, but with question marks at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody put it on the teleprompter and I don't know how to read.
So I think that is our theory to explain this dancing plague. That,
yeah.
You know, it was not the ergot, which I think we're going to go into in depth in a future episode, because that has been linked to fun things like the Salem witch trials and whatnot. But I suspect it might be like a little from column A, a little from column B, a little from, you know, various columns. And because we're still kind of seeing this event, and, you know, because we don't want to drone on for 5 hours, I could talk about a few other case studies that come to mind about this kind of like mass symptomology in the absence of an actual like toxin or pathogen, where people all like report symptoms when there's like nothing actually like physically around to be getting people sick. So like that's a thing. And it just sounds like it manifested in a really, really strange way, because maybe people were just under so much freaking stress because the Middle Ages in Europe sucked so bad that they just had to dance.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to dance, you know?
And they just danced until their feet fell off and they died.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about it.
And all I can think about is that the scene, because I'm a real cool kid, the scene in Hocus Pocus where Bette Midler tells them to dance until they die. And then like all the parents keep dancing and the kids block their ears so that they don't dance.
That was such a good movie.
Yep. Listen, it's solid, solid. Really glad they didn't do a reboot. They're standing their ground. I'm glad. Mm. Bette Midler, you fight the good fight. Stop those reboots when it comes to great, great old movies. that was my Hocus Pocus rant. But as always,
you get one Hocus Pocus rant
per episode,
per season.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
So, as always, everybody, if you like what you heard, please head over to Apple Podcast, Spotify, wherever you listen, leave us a review, rate us, let us know what you think about us. And if you have any ideas,
Oprah's radar.
Yeah, I mean, come on. It can't be that hard to get, you know, the Popra's, like, approval.
The Popra.
She'll, you know. But, yeah, so, and again, we will post everything, all the show notes and everything with these episodes, and make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at Viral Load Podcast. And if you have an idea for an episode, or you want to tell us that you think something else is the reason why the dancing plague happened,
send
us an
email.
Think? Yeah,
you do the work.
Yeah, you do the work for us.
Yeah.
And so send us an email over at viralloadpod@gmail.com. And yeah, this has been fun. This is a silly, silly thing that happened, and it still continues.
I learned a lot. I learned something. I don't know how useful any of this was. I mean,
yeah, I feel like this is the part of your brain.
I feel
kind of
dumber. Yeah, I feel like I pushed some useful stuff out, but you know.
Listen, you know, so yeah, that'll wrap us up. So, as always, this has been Viral Load, and I've been Andy Pupa.
I'm Brett Bales, still and hate dancing.
And goodbye.
Bye. Dance, dance, revolution. Ooh, that was good.